Good morning, cycling enthusiasts, followers of the blog, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal, coached athletes from tailwindcoaching.com, and regular readers and viewers of this blog. It's probably the first time you guys are going to be hearing my voice. I don't usually do things this particular way, but the topic at hand this time is a little bit too massive, if you will, for a simple post. I like to try and keep all of my posts under, maybe maximum of 1,500 words, if that. I know some of my writing gets a little bit lengthy, but this topic is just too big, too long to put in word format. So let's get, jumping on this, and we're going to talk about something that I alluded to in a very recent post. I believe it was October 22nd, actually, was the post in question. If I go back here and take a quick look, October 22nd was, in fact, the day when the UCI released their decision on the Lance Armstrong ban. And we're going to talk today about Lance Armstrong and how I feel and how I felt about it and my opinion and my thoughts on it. I've gotten a lot of people who have actually been questioning what my thoughts are and how I see the whole process and whether it was a good process, it was a bad process, and what it means for cycling. So, on October 22nd, it was a Monday, I was up early enough to watch the entire press conference live with Pat McQuaid and, his attorneys for the UCI and everybody else. But what are my thoughts on the whole thing is kind of the big question that everybody's been posing to me. Some of the athletes that I coach, certainly a number of you on Facebook, have been questioning, and there have been some heated discussions regarding the evidence that's come out against Lance, and the way it's been presented, and the way it's been pursued, and the way he frankly chose not to pursue arbitration. I'll sip a coffee here so that I can keep myself going, but anyway, let me start off by saying that having read the entire USADA report, all 202 pages of the report itself, having read the affidavits from Levi Leipheimer, from George Hincapie, from Tyler Hamilton, and Tom Danielson, Dave Zabriskie, Christian Vandeveld, Jonathan Vauders, etc., etc., and having the background that I do, and having done a fair amount of recent research into the physiological parameters of doping science, if you will, blood doping chemistry, EPO usage, the bio passport, the way the bio passport actually functions, the way they analyze the bio passport to really determine whether there's an infraction or not. That being said, having read all the information, having read a lot of the reports, from various news sources, having read a lot of the information from Michael Ashenden, the Australian scientist who was on the UCI Biopassport Commission for a long time, and honestly, from years and years ago, I don't have any doubt in my mind that every single one of Lance Armstrong's victories were achieved through the use of some kind of performance-enhancing substances, most notably EPO, testosterone, and autologous blood transfusion. To give you a little background, really, I seriously came into cycling not really all that long ago, considering 2003-2004. I watched Lance's Tour wins. I watched Floyd Landis's win. I watched him be disqualified. I watched every single person around Lance get busted for doping one way or another. Jan Ulrich, Ivan Basso serving 2 years for Puerto, Ulrich retiring and then afterwards being sanctioned. Pretty much everybody who's won a tour or been close to winning a tour, you know, since like 1986, has really been implicated or already, you know, found guilty of some kind of doping violation. The chances that Armstrong could have possibly ever beaten them by busting his ass on his bike for 5 hours a day or whatever that quote is, frankly, it's laughable. And, to be perfectly honest with you, I can't believe that he's gotten away with it this long. But enough on his guilt. The main thing that bothers me about the whole Armstrong thing and the whole Armstrong discussion is that there's a couple things. And one of them primarily is the way Armstrong and Brunel essentially almost ran that operation like it's like it was a mafioso type deal, you know, and forcing Christian Vandevelde, forcing Zabriskie and guys like that to get on the program, as they called it, or lose their job, is to me a little presumptuous to find out, you know, to try and make somebody do something that clearly is not either A, ethical or B, legal. It reeks very much of a mob-type setting, but, you know, that seems to be what happened in this case, and that's kind of troubling to me. It's actually very troubling to me that one guy could wield that kind of power, and for those who chose not to follow that path, Hamilton, after he left U.S. Postal, Filippo Simoni, Bessons, any of the guys that spoke out against Lance or the establishment of Lance and Brunel, found themselves kind of ostracized or, you know, even pushed out of the sport. Look at Bessons. Bessons just got busted for missing an amateur mountain bike event doping control in France. Interesting timing with the whole Armstrong issue, but Simone's out of the sport. Hamilton, you know, Hamilton had his own problems, that's for sure, and you know, you can't blame all the issues that Tyler Hamilton's has had on Armstrong, but there certainly have been, I mean, I'm certainly sure that culture of doping and lying is partly Armstrong's doing. Landis, look at Floyd Landis. He's a train wreck of a cyclist at this point. Again, you have to wonder if Armstrong didn't shape him to be that way. So it's very troubling to me from, you know, that perspective, what we learned in that USADA report. Now, the other thing that was very interesting to me, and I think one of the things that as a coach really bothers me also is people seeing performances like that, and even seeing performances today, which are, I'll go out on a limb and say, admittedly cleaner, but people seeing performances like that and still assuming, you know, and holding them in high regard and still assuming that there's there's something to reach for, you know, in that respect. And superhuman performance will always be superhuman performance. There's no, really no two ways about it, and there's really no, no ways to get around that. It's nice for people to strive for things, but again, or I should say then again, how can you strive for something that's very likely impossible to achieve under your own power? As a coach, that's very frustrating because, you know, you see people who really do want to put in work and want to improve themselves, improve their average power, their functional threshold power, improve their speed, lactate threshold, heart rate, or anything else of that nature. And they see, you know, huge, huge performances by professional athletes. And this is no different from a kid on a basketball court emulating Michael Jordan. But there is definitely an expectation of huge performance gains. Well, it's true. I have athletes who have gotten huge performance gains out of just plain old bread and water riding and smart training. People see these huge, unreal performances, and then there is some sort of expectation where, you know, they're going to suddenly, in 2 weeks, be blowing the doors off their group. And to be perfectly honest with you, from a coaching and a physiological standpoint and everything else, that's a tough ask, if not borderline impossible. Now, I'm not saying that you can't make great gains. I'm not saying that you can't make awesome improvements, and I'm not saying that proper coaching, proper training stress balance between work and your training, and smart, focused training won't give you huge gains, but those gains are not going to be, generally not going to be, the huge improvements that you see from some professional athletes where, you know, look at Thomas Vogler. He can go from being absolutely bottom of the barrel in some races to, you know, taking the mountains jersey at the Tour de France or a couple of years ago, defending that lead in the Tour de France over the high mountains, over the Alps, when he's never been known as an alpine climber. It's very interesting. And troubling from a coaching standpoint. Other things that were a little bit surprising with the Armstrong issue, so to speak. I guess this ties into coaching a little bit, but it also ties into everybody who follows professional cycling or, you know, enjoys watching races or follows any of the politics of the peloton or anything else, which, if you watch professional racing, you can't help but follow the politics of the peloton. They're pretty much there every time. Every broadcast talks about it, and, you know, every broadcaster talks about it. But after the verdict was delivered that the UCI would uphold the lifetime ban, the stripping of all results from 1998 on, The reaction from the peloton was disheartening, to be perfectly honest with you. Guys like Alberto Contador and Samuel Sanchez, Valverde, most notably, quote, the Spanish Armada, where it seems to be most doping, haven of most doping appears to be Spain, between the football teams, the cycling teams, and everything else. But the support for Armstrong and the belief that he was still innocent and the suggestion that the UCI was somehow wrong to uphold that USADA ban was, that's pretty tough to swallow. But, you know, again, it's maybe we should be sending a task force to Spain to sort of investigate all that. I mean, after all, that is where we had Operation Puerto and all that kind of stuff going on. Interestingly enough, very few of the Italian riders would have actually come out in support of Armstrong. And my only suspicion has to be that is entirely to do with the quality of the anti-doping efforts in Italy was a Mantova investigation, the Padova or whatever it is, investigation that, you know, just very recently was seen the light of day, and the prosecution that's being handed down therein is pretty much evidence that the Italian side is working fairly diligently to make things change. But overall, the Peloton has not really come out to decry the doping practices that have gone on. That most of the statements are generally of the type where, you know, riders didn't know what was going on, were surprised at the extent of it, but no condemnation for anybody. And even riders from teams like T-Mobile or Once or Kelme or any of the ones that had, Rabobank even, any of the, you know, teams that had organized, team-wide organized doping practices, the people are not coming out and, you know, and decrying that act is it's, I'm almost left speechless by it, to be perfectly honest with you, but, it's definitely something to think about, because the, that shield of Omerta in the Peloton is alive and well, which is very obvious, and, that's kind of tough, it really is. I would have expected a lot more out of the Peloton today, especially in terms of condemning that practice and hoping to see that it never happens again. But what can you do? You can only sit by and vote with your dollars to support teams and companies that support the fight against doping. Something else that really gets to the meat of this issue, and it's a very touchy subject, as some of you on Facebook who are following me, and some people have noted in some forum posts by various people. The touchy subject that I'm going to touch on here right about now is the continued support for Armstrong by numerous sources. It's very true that all of his sponsors, Nike, Anheuser-Busch, Trek, have all severed ties with him over the USADA report. The thing that bothers me, and I'll tell you perfectly honestly how I feel about everything, is that Armstrong should damn well be in prison. He lied under oath. He actively tried to ruin many, many people's lives because of his desire to conceal his activity, to protect his reputation, to protect the reputation of Livestrong. You know, the guy should be in jail. Absolutely. Any of his co-conspirators, people who profited off of his lies and his ventures, should go to jail as well. Chris Carmichael, where are you? You claim to be Lance's coach, and you're completely oblivious to the fact that he's got more dope in him than a Chinese drug ring. It's laughable at this point. But what bothers me most is the fact that this evidence is out there. It's easily accessible. It's been in the media. Yet people who ride a bike on a weekly basis, three times a week, two times a week, four, whatever it is, people who are pinning on a race number, probably people who are pinning on a race number this weekend, albeit it'd be cyclocross and not a road race, people who are pinning on a race number this weekend are actually out there supporting the guy who created an age in cycling that it's unacceptable. Cheating is flat out wrong. It just is. The biggest illustration of this was, if you remember, a few months back, a gentleman by the name of David Anthony was caught at Grand Fondo, New York, taking EPO, human growth hormone, and I believe testosterone, but I don't recall off the top of my head. But he was one of two positive controls at Grand Fondo, New York, after he won Grand Fondo, New York. Now, this guy was a Cat 3 racer, if I remember at the time. He won Grand Fondo, New York. If I remember his interview correctly, the one that he gave, he stated that he doped in Cat 4 so that he could hang on to the group, started winning, moved up and got his upgrade to Cat 3 and started doping there just so that he could, quote, hang with the group. And then he won Grand Fondo, New York after expecting to not perform well. It turned out to be his undoing because USADA doping control was there and they took his sample and they busted him. The thing that I don't understand is how anybody who's pinning on a race number and competing against guys like David Anthony, who are doping as Cat 5 racers, Cat 4 racers, they're doping as Cat 4 cyclocross racers or Cat, you know, level 3, Cat 3, whatever they change the mountain bike racing designations to, you know, bottom level and mid-level mountain bike racers, you know, guys in their 50s and 60s who are taking testosterone, albeit from prescription, but, you know, again, that's against the UCI and the WADA and the USADA banned substance list. People who are still supporting Armstrong just don't seem to understand that Armstrong is sort of the guy that made this okay. Everybody knew he was cheating. Everybody knew he was, you know, lying. He was full of crap. But he was winning. So apparently it was okay. And apparently people who are still supporting him just don't seem to see that by supporting him they're basically saying, hey, it's all right if you get butt. It's all right if you cheat as long as you don't get caught. You know, I have a real problem with the guy who decries David Anthony, winner of Grand Fondo New York and busted for EPO, but stands behind Armstrong and says it's a witch hunt, he didn't do it, leave the past in the past. There's an old saying that goes, if we don't acknowledge the past, we're destined to repeat it. If we don't acknowledge the fact that doping existed in cycling and still does exist in cycling, we're destined to repeat something like that. It's only a matter of time until the axe comes down on another rider or another team who has been systematically doping for years. And a big part of that, that really, really is hard to swallow, is the fact that if we don't remove that kind of thing from the sport, how are we going to continue to encourage junior development and kids to join the sport and kids to start racing and kids to start really pushing their goals if there's no such thing as a level playing field? Do we really want kids who are in their teens, early to late teens, you know, early 20s, whatever, in the sport where they have to make a choice whether they're going to, you know, get jacked up on EPO, HGH, testosterone, and, you know, what have you, or basically hang up the bike? You know, there are kids out there with enormous talent, but they're never going to see the light of day because they choose not to stick a needle in their arm. And now I know there's plenty of problems with dope in high school sports, middle school sports, football. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen it in my practice. I've seen it, you know, in statistical analysis. It's unreal what people will do to perform. But, and this is a big but, if we continue to support people like Armstrong who played the system, cheated the system, and gamed the system for years, if we continue to support him as opposed to pressure him for answers and condemn that kind of behavior, what kind of, you know, if we don't do that, what kind of, you know, message are we sending to authorities, to kids, to other racers, to the entire cycling community at large? You know, there needs to be a single voice, a solitary voice that comes out and says, what he did was wrong. He deserves to pay for it. And we're talking about Armstrong, of course. But he deserves to pay for it. He deserves to have to pay back his prize money. He deserves to lose his titles. He deserves to pay back everybody that he wronged and tried to ruin. Hell, he deserves to be in jail. Maybe that'll send a little bit of a signal that says that you can't get away with this. You can try, but you're not going to get away with it. We will get you at some point or another. That's what seems to really bother me about the Armstrong case. And, you know, my personal opinion, like I said, that the guy cheated, the guy lied, the guy is frankly a slime ball. As for the Livestrong issue, years back in 2009, I did the Livestrong event in Philadelphia. That was the first time I'd ever ridden a century. And I raised a fair amount of money for it. I had two grandparents that passed away from cancer. I've had numerous friends who've had cancer. I've dealt with it. I've had patients who've had cancer, beaten cancer, and those who've passed away from it. Livestrong as a charity is, well, they're improving in their image. They never used to be a very good charity in terms of where their money was spent. But to be perfectly honest, I'm very uncomfortable at this point ever supporting that charity again, as long as he has a spot on the board. And especially knowing that he tried to use that charity for political leverage to investigate the USADA to, you know, try and stop the investigation and question the finance, you know, the financial end of USADA and everything else. I see that as a gross misappropriation of charity resources, and it's something that I can't look the other way and say, yeah, go ahead and support this charity. If you're going to support a charity, there's plenty of other ones out there that could use the help, and they really don't have someone, you know, there who's of questionable integrity on their board or on their board of directors or whatever. So I'm looking at my timer, and we're talking about we're up to about 28 and a quarter minutes here. There's a lot to be said about Lance, about Livestrong, about the UCI, about everybody he raced with, about the fallout from the investigation. I think we're only starting to see the very tip of the iceberg in terms of what happens to cycling as a professional sport after this report and after the investigation. And to be perfectly frank, I think the Mantova and Padova, or whatever, the investigations in Italy are going to only serve to amplify the information that USADA has put forth in front of the world. And it's going to be a very interesting time in cycling, the next 6 months or so, I'm guessing. That's my guess. But I think things are going to be changing, and I'm hoping that they'll change for the better. You know, it's thinking about going to Battenkill next year and thinking about David Anthony winning Battenkill as a Cat 5 and then as a Cat 4, you know, racer, it's a little bit tough to want to pin on a number and go out in early January and do miles in January, knowing that very likely the guy who's at the front of the pack is had a needle in his arm a week ago. It's tough, but I'm hoping that the tide will change, and the winds will change. Will start to blow, and we'll see a new renewed effort into clean racing, not only on the professional level, but in the grassroots level as well. And that's, you know, that's really where it needs to start and where I'm hoping it will start. So, everybody who's stuck with me through all this rambling and my thoughts through this, thanks very much. Tailwind-coaching.com or thedailygrind.robdemanii.com. For any further stuff. And keep an eye out for you know, some further stuff. If I get a good reception from this podcast, I may just try to do a little more regular podcast. I kind of like the format, but we'll see what happens. So, to all my athletes and readers and casual observers out there, thanks much. Ride safe. Keep the rubber side down. Keep plugging away out there. I'll see you next time.